And, okay, you guys, quit all your...
Next, our next speaker, I'm sure is familiar to everyone, is President of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Tom Amiano.
Thank you. Let me localize it for you in terms of what's going to happen at City Hall on Monday and what's been happening. I know that I just want to acknowledge former Supervisor Angela Alioto because she fought this lonely battle by herself on the Board of Supervisors when she was on the Board of Supervisors. I remember joining her on the Board of Supervisors along with Supervisor Bierman about municipalization. I had to learn how to say municipalization so I could fight for it. And how lonely it was, the three of us, and what a clarion call Supervisor Angela Alioto put out. And I'll never forget the meeting where she stood up. What they did was, a couple of other supervisors who are no longer around, killed this issue in committee, which is actually a really kind of chicken shit procedure to do. Usually you have professional courtesy and it gets to the full board and then they kill you. So this was particularly mean-spirited and rotten. And if you look at the list of contributors to campaigns, you know, you'll see PG&E, 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 PG&E. So Angela got up there. It was really I think she invoked every parliamentary – I didn't even know some of the parliamentary procedures she invoked to get that thing out of committee, you know. I mean, she said, who is Robert anyway, Robert's Rules of Order? Some control queen, you know. So what we were doing and what she was doing quite adroitly was we were denied, but by reacting to the denial, we were educating. And I think it was Rob Morse the other day said, oh, Angela Alioto and Tom Amiano, we call them flakes. But now, you know, and my mother always said, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. Italian mothers do that. Angela knows that. So I want to say, I told you so, I told you. And it's interesting to have all these converts in Sacramento, too, because some of those very same people, you know, voted against what Angela was talking about. And I also acknowledge Bruce Bregman of the Bay Guardian because people said that he was Pancho Sanz and he was you know, tilting at windmills and et cetera and so forth. But he's been vindicated as well. So here's what happened. They came up with the idea for San Francisco to have a MUD. And we really started it about November of last year. We formed this thing called the LAFCO. A lot of it's very arcane. A lot of it's very Byzantine. But, you know, we are not intimidated by that. And Angela is co-chair of an organization called CLUB. And we were able to get 24,000 signatures about forming a MUD and to show you how eager people were. A mistake was made, not by the signature gatherers, but by an interpretation. And you can't do it in one locality only, one county only. So we had to restart the petition signing and include Brisbane, which we have done. And we still got that number of signatures. And the city attorney immediately... The bad guy here is the city attorney. There's no doubt. I mean, they fought PG&E and they fought municipalization. They fought many, many, many things. And they said, well, you know, we don't think this is going to work. But we said, oh, no, it's going to work. And we got the signature certified. We formed a LAFCO. We thought we'd get a running start, hoping that the scenario that did happen would happen, which is, you know, a more progressive board of supervisors through district elections. Woo! And the first meetings were a little difficult. I mean, I don't want to, you know, name names or embarrass anyone, but there was a supervisor on there. Her initials were Barbara Kaufman. And she... or a supervisor at House fell on her sister is what I used to say. All right, so she did everything but acrobatics to stop that on the committee. Because, you know, we had a very limited pool. The gene pool of the Board of Supervisors before December was very limited. So, you know, there was only a few supervisors you could even appoint to this thing. And some good citizens who were on there. Neil Eisenberg became the chair. So we were able to challenge the city attorney's interpretation, splitting hairs, et cetera, and so forth. And so we did all the homework that's needed to do. And, you know, it could make your eyes glaze over if you didn't have the kind of passion that I think, you know, I've heard in this room today. And we did it. You know, we got all the forms sent in and basically all the okays. City attorney keeps saying, you can't do it, you can't do it. Well, if we listen to the city attorney, there'd be no domestic partners. If we listen to the city attorney, there'd be no rent control, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we didn't listen to the city attorney. So when the new board was elected, we were all very, very happy. But to show you that it never stops and that the establishment is a relentless, relentless, relentless eating machine, the city attorney started to send around people who were very articulate, very moderate. They didn't gesticulate like I did. They didn't have the passion that Angela has. So, well, we're very, very cool about this issue. Now we've seen the light. We got religion. We like municipalization. We should look at this. This would be immediate. This makes sense for your district supervisor, so-and-so. We don't need the mud. So I would go around after they spoke and say, what just happened? So the supervisors would say, this just happened. Maybe we should go that way. I said, no, you can't go that way. If it smells good and it looks good and it's coming from the city attorney's office, we're going to get fucked. You tell me. I told this one supervisor, a very nice man and somewhat moderate and conservative. I said, do you really think that Republican older woman who lives in your district can afford a threefold increase in her PG&E bill next month? And when you vote against mud, when you vote against public power, she's going to say, why did he vote against public power? Think about it. Think about it. Think about it. Think about local control. Think about why there were district elections. So at the very last meeting, the city attorney again stood up and split a lot of hairs. Race baiting, we got race baiting. We got everything about the lines. You know, there has to be five wards that are put on the ballot along with the formation of the mud. And, you know, that doesn't bounce at all because it's a citywide election. It's not like district elections. So it's a one person, one vote. Everybody gets the vote. And it's a very fair and equitable way to elect the five wards. They even got the city council president of Brisbane to come and say what bad people we all were and how Brisbane did not want public power. And, you know, I'm sure if you look at his contributor list, I'm sure you're going to see those three little letters, PG&E. So, and we know from talking to people in Brisbane, of course they want it. They don't want their bills to go up. They see what's happening. They got religion too. So on Monday, and I've gone around and I've, you know, counted noses, on Monday, we will vote, the Board of Supervisors, to put this on the ballot for November because you need a two-thirds. And November is the time that we can do it. Okay. Right. Thanks to a lot of good people sending a lot of emails. Thanks to, you know, my little, I guess you could call it shuttle diplomacy from office to office to office. There's no problem with getting the votes now. But, you know, it goes to show you that we have to always remain sentinel, even on causes that we think are internalized. Because there are those out there with the invested power and you know, they've internalized methodologies, you know, to try to persuade people differently, to hold a different kind of carrot out there. So we're going to have the opportunity on Monday to make a little history. As soon as the vote is over, you know, this is a litigious cesspool that we operate in. I'm sure there'll be lawsuits. I'm sure there'll be a lot of things. But finally, in the minds of the average person, the unradical person, the non-lefty person, the grassroots person, PG&E is the bad guy and the villain that it should be. And I know that the voice of the people are going to be with us. And I know we're going to have a mud in November. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Unfortunately, a couple of our speakers have to leave early, but I just don't want people to be concerned that there won't be anyone here for questions and answers, because all but two of them will stay to the bitter end. But Tom and Graham have other engagements. So I promise you would hear more about the Labour Party and the Labour Party's position on this issue, and that's going to happen right now. Our next speaker is Robin David, who is a member of the Golden Gate chapter of the Labour Party. He also works for PG&E and is a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1245.
Thank you. I have to say from the get-go that I don't represent PG&E's point of view. I think that'll become clear as I go on. I also, unfortunately, can't speak on behalf of my local, although hopefully that'll change after a while. I'd like to thank you all for coming this evening to discuss what, in fact, is the only practical and realistic proposal for solving this crisis, and that, of course, is public power. Everybody agrees, from Governor Davis, from John Burton, from George the Younger, to the experts and the professors and the journalists, all of us here in this room, that deregulation is a failure. But when you look at what people propose as the solutions, you see things break down into two roads, two courses of action. On the one hand, there are those who think that the market is broken and our task is to fix it, that the problem is the market. What they're doing in Sacramento now is trying to fix that market. And what that includes and is based on is a bailout of the utilities and at the expense of the taxpayers and the ratepayers, who, after all, overwhelmingly are the working people of California. What it means is guaranteeing profits before you guarantee the reliability of the system. It means guaranteeing profits before you protect the environment. And underlying the whole process is the view, the vision, if you will, that electricity is a commodity. Electricity is not a commodity. You can do without a television, you can do without a new car, you can do without your Starbucks, but you can't do without electricity. As an individual or as a society, this is an essential social resource, not a commodity. And when you look at it as a commodity and deal with it that way, you don't look for the lowest price, you look for the highest price and the highest profit. You don't worry about whether the mix between fossil and alternative is, because you're only interested in making profit off of your particular method of production. You're not worried about where plants will be sited and what impact it'll have on the community there. You're not interested in research into alternative sources of power. You're not interested in the environmental impact of generating or transmitting electricity. Matter of fact, you're hostile to it because it means increased costs for you. You're not interested in the future when power plants get overbuilt and what impact that'll have on the economy. And in fact, you're not even interested in whether electric generation and power distribution is reliable, because again, you're interested in your profit. To protect this valuable social resource, it's simple. I'm talking to the converted here, what we need, and that's a democratically controlled public power authority whose sole responsibility is the cheapest possible price for power produced in a reliable and environmentally responsible way. And that's not, you know, some kind of pie-in-the-sky vision. There are all kinds of examples, of, at least in part, of how that works. There's Los Angeles Power and, what do they call it, Department of Water and Power. There's SMUD in Sacramento. There's Palo Alto and Alameda have MUDs. I understand all of Nebraska is run with public power. You've got the Tennessee Valley Authority, Bonneville, other federal projects. So it's not something that we're talking about that's some mystical vision. But when we talk about it, we also have to ask, what kind of movement do we need that'll bring about this public power? And I think we have to start by turning to those who would gain from public power, and that's the ratepayers, the taxpayers, and again, we're talking about the majority of people of California, the working people of California. And so far, consumer activists, environmental activists, other individuals have been spearheading this movement, have done a wonderful job of making this issue one that's before the public mind and increasingly made people conscious of it. But if we want the kind of movement that's big enough and powerful enough to sway what happens in Sacramento on a national scale, we have to bring the organizations of these working people, and that's the trade union movement, to begin to bear on the issue. Now, it's certainly true, and Angela will know from personal experience, that the trade union movement has not always been friendly to environmental activists and consumer activists, and vice versa. There's lots of stones to throw. But I think we have a monumental opportunity now, especially because all of the members of the trade union movement and all of the industries that they're involved in are feeling the bite. We want to take the lead in making the overture and begin to create this very powerful coalition. And when the weight numerically and politically of the California Federation of Labor, of the San Francisco Labor Council and the other labor councils, of the big union locals, are brought to bear, you'll get the tremendous momentum that you need to bring along the community activists, the small business associations of restaurants and corner grocers, and all of whom are feeling the pinch, but none of whom have the political weight by themselves. Now, I'd like to spend a couple of minutes talking about another group of workers who I think is critical to win over if we want to have a victory in this struggle. And that's my coworkers, the men and women who make and deliver electricity. Gordon Smith, the CEO of PG&E, is very fond of getting out and saying, "We 19,000 who work at PG&E are insulted that you won't let us make a profit. We 19,000 are insulted that you won't let us slip into bankruptcy." And more than that, every day on the job, in our mailboxes at home, on the internet at work, at the crew meetings, the management never stops harping at how they don't want us to make a profit. They don't want us or will allow us to go into bankruptcy. They want to threaten our jobs. And you can be sure when Gordon talks about they, he's talking about consumer advocates, environmental activists, and especially he's talking about the growing movement for public power. So I think that in order to win over utility workers, you don't have to convince us that our employment is threatened. We've seen that for 5 years. People now talk, oh, layoffs. There aren't very many layoffs now. The layoffs were 5 years ago and have been rolling down ever since. My bargaining unit went from 20,000 to 13,000. My shop at Hunter's Point was over 40 people. Now it's barely more than a dozen. Our power plant is slated to be closed as PG&E slides out of production of electric energy. You also don't have to convince us that the market is broken and that deregulation doesn't work. We've seen that process long before this crisis came to bear. Many of us have been thinking about what the alternatives are and have been thinking of and talking about, begun to talk about public power. I think to win over my coworkers, the public power movement must make it clear to itself and to everyone else that it understands that PG&E, Southern Cal Edison, Duke, Southern, Calpine are different than the people who work for it. That when PG&E makes a profit, we don't profit. When Gordon Smith cashes in his stock options, he doesn't tell us first that he's about to hire bankruptcy attorneys. I think what the movement has to make clear to utility workers is that public power will depend on the skills and the dedication of the workers, just as the power of production always has. That public power will offer secure jobs with union contracts at the very same time that the profiteers and the generation pirates are doing everything they can to undercut public power, to undercut job security and union contracts in the plants that they're buying up. Duke and Southern have signed the worst contracts I think I've ever seen, unfortunately, with my union. And Calpine, homeboy Calpine, not out-of-state Calpine, refuses so far to sign any contract whatsoever. See, I think utility workers, even more than everyone else, have a self-interest in public power. And the movement must make it clear and help us understand that the utility workers are essential to what public power is going to be. And the movement must make it, all of us feel welcome in the movement. And I think when that happens, public utility workers will want to join this movement and will bring our powerful unions along with us. Now, I'd like to close on a related point. As announced, I'm a member of the Labor Party, and our call to arms has always been the bosses have two parties, we should at least have one. And I think the current crisis really illustrates this point very vividly, that Democratic Party crafted legislation was passed under the administration of Bush the Older. It was carried through FERC during the Clinton administration. Pete Wilson's PUC initiated deregulation in California. Davis and John Burton have assured everybody that they want to carry this out in the context of the market. George the Younger would undermine our environmental gains and use this crisis to do that. All of the Bay Area lawmakers, with except for one Republican, supported deregulation. It's very clear that the politicians, all of them, Democrats and Republicans alike, defend the interests of those who pay their bills rather than of those who elected them. We in the Labor Party believe that in order to win the battle for public power, we must build a movement based on and responsible to those people who have the most interest in public power and winning it. And first and foremost, that's the working people of California, the taxpayers, the ratepayers. And in fact, the people in the neighborhoods and, of course, the small business people who are so drastically affected. And I think that when we have won the fight for public power, we will have made a giant stride away from lesser evil politics and towards a movement that can truly fight for the needs of working people both in our state and on a national level. And that, of course, is on behalf of the vast majority. Thank you.
While the notion of the Labor Party is at the top of everyone's mind, I'll take this time to point out that on everyone's